proceed to the fourth case of the day, United States v. Webster. Mr. Robinson.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Matthew Robinson on behalf of the defendant appellant, Christopher Webster. I'd like to thank you on behalf of Mr. Webster for allowing us to argue this case before this Court. His family is here today, as they do support him. I'd like to start out quickly with facts that aren't in dispute, because I think it shows my case. Facts that are not in dispute. Officer Troy Watson was doing a good job investigating criminal activity for his police department. He received information that a person named Chris was selling drugs near a school, across from a school, I should say, out of a residence. Through some police work, he developed a confidential informant, secured a search warrant for the suspect was the defendant, Christopher Webster, secured a search warrant, and the police went and executed that search warrant in Mr. Webster's residence. While they were executing the search warrant, Mr. Webster pulls up and the police blocked him in his driveway, I believe. He was handcuffed. And he was told that they were executing a search of his house. They were executing a search warrant. At that point, one of the officers asked him to search the vehicle, and the response of Mr. Webster was unclear from the record, the officers then searched the vehicle. Why is that important? Because that's what got him 20 years in prison. He's in prison for 20 years because of the drugs in the vehicle, not because of the drugs in the house.
Didn't the district court find that that response, however ambiguous it was consent?
The district court did find that it was consent, but we contest that finding strictly based upon the evidence that was presented at the suppression hearing. Now,
that finding gets a lot of deference, doesn't it, on appeal?
It certainly does, but there's no when you look at the totality of the circumstances here, including the testimony from the officer both officers who said that Mr. Webster gave consent, their response was not Christopher Webster said, sure, go ahead and search the vehicle. It wasn't even clear how they asked the question. Instead, there was an inaudible response from Mr. Webster, perhaps, or something that gave the officers the belief that he had consented. But they certainly could point to no specific actions on behalf of Mr. Webster that said, you go ahead and search the vehicle. Now, that being the case here, if Christopher Webster nodded his head when they asked for consent, the issue then becomes whether that consent was voluntary or not. And I think that the record speaks to the fact that even if Christopher Webster nodded his head or gave some sort of audible response, go ahead or whatever he may have said, the circumstances demonstrate that this consent was not voluntary. Now, why isn't it voluntary? Handcuffs, that's one reason. Now, the reason is he's a relatively low educational level, and he's also been told that they're executing a search warrant. In that instance, it's very easy for someone to say, what choice do I have? You have a search warrant. There's no distinguishing between the search warrant, between the search of the vehicle and the search of the house. There was a search warrant. Now, under those circumstances, there's not a way to demonstrate that the consent was voluntarily given or that it was any way valid. And another factor, and this was a focus at the suppression hearing, another factor that demonstrates the consent wasn't valid was there was no Miranda warnings given or anything like this. Now, that doesn't rule out the questioning by the police, as the district court noted. Can we search your vehicle? But it does demonstrate that he has not been advised of his rights. He's been handcuffed. He's got a relatively low educational level. He's been told there's a warrant that the police are executing. What choice did he have but to nod his head when they said, let me look in your car? So the argument that we're making on appeal is that clearly if there was consent, if the court made the finding that Christopher Webster nodded his head or affirmatively responded, it never reached the issue of voluntariness. And the court needed to make that additional finding as well. Now, one of the things the government, and I just want to address this quickly, the government says that Mr. Webster never raised this claim, that it was abandoned or it was waived. The court ruled on it, and he did address it. Page four of the motion to suppress, it was talked about, and the district court made a finding on page 8 of its order that the consent was valid. Now, if this just wasn't argued, why is it being addressed? And that's the point of our argument. I understand that we didn't bring up the full scale of everything that was argued in the suppression hearing. And that's because some of that wouldn't work. It's not a good case, some of this. But the part about the consent was touched on by the court, but it should have been focused on, I believe. And I think it is a valid argument. This is not an abandonment, and it's not plain error. This plenary review should apply in this instance, and with that in mind, we would ask simply for a vacating of the conviction so this can go back at least to the district court for determination on the issue of voluntariness of the consent. And I would also point out another factor. This issue, in order to obtain justice, this issue would not result in someone walking free who had been dealing drugs. It simply changes the penalty structure that the court would find, because there were drugs found in the house, and that warrant was a valid warrant. It just changes the minimum mandatory from a 20-year sentence down to 0 years and allows the court to sentence this man within the guideline range, which I believe the low end was 110 months. I can't see the future, but perhaps that's what would happen. Now, I see that my light has gone on.
You're into rebuttal now.
Yes. So okay. I would like to...
Let me ask you just hypothetically.
Certainly.
What if they just executed a search warrant on the house and, 14 grams or something they found in the house?
It's a little less than 20 grams.
Most of the crack, over 100 grams, was in the car.
Correct.
Let's suppose he was only charged with the crack that was found in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the government then would go to the probation officer who was doing the pre-sentence report and say, we also found 109 grams in the car. Would the exclusionary rule apply to relevant conduct?
I don't think so. It's an interesting question, one I haven't briefed. But everything I have seen is that almost anything goes as far as sentencing goes, as long as the evidence is reliable.
Yeah.
So my belief is that the exclusionary rule would not rule out the fact that additional drugs were found.
So they
and that's my initial reaction, so I may be wrong. I'm sorry.
Just something that...
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Cox?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. I'd like to begin, there is a process that has to be followed here, and at least the point of our brief was to show that in this case the process was not followed by Mr. Webster. Maybe some of the questions that Mr. Robinson has posed this morning that could have been answered might have been had he raised those very issues in the district court, but he didn't do that. He never challenged the voluntariness of his consent. In fact, it's almost like he agreed he consented. He said, but I was illegally detained, so my consent was obtained by illegal consent. Or you couldn't even ask for consent unless you give me my Miranda rights. And the district court specifically addressed those two issues, which are the issues that Mr. Webster raised in the district court. So to come before this court now and ask you to go back and look at matters that were not even brought to the district court's attention, where there was no evidence offered with regard to those factors, is why we have a process that says you specify in the district court the grounds for your motion to suppress, and then you have a hearing on it and you produce evidence. And so because the process wasn't followed here, the district court was never required to make a finding of voluntariness. So addressing the six or seven factors of voluntariness might have been a different story had that been specifically addressed by Mr. Webster below. I'd also just like to correct one factual mistake that Mr. Robinson, I'm sure, inadvertently made. At least the testimony at the suppression hearing on page 56 was that Officer Wasson specifically advised Mr. Webster when he approached him on the driver's side and brought him out of the vehicle that he had a search warrant for his house. So I don't think there's any question that the officers told him that the search warrant was for the house. It wasn't just some amorphous, we have a search warrant. I think the other factor, going back to my process issue, is that the only evidence before the district court with regard to what Mr. Webster said came from the police officers. Mr. Webster could have testified as his right. He chose not to. But in terms of the district court's finding with regard to the fact that Mr. Webster said, I consent, in whatever words those might have been, is based solely on the testimony of the police officers, whom he found to be credible. So it'd be hard to say that the district court erred when the only evidence of the consent and whether it was given was that, in fact, Mr. Webster gave consent, even though the officers couldn't specify the language that he used. The court has no further questions, and I'll rest on my brief and yield the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Mr. Robinson?
I do apologize if I misled the court. I wasn't attempting to do that. But I think my point is still the same. When someone's faced, obviously you or I probably can't envision being in these shoes, but I can imagine how easily it can be to let me put it to you this way. For a criminal defendant to understand the nuances of what a warrant covers, what a warrant doesn't cover, when they say they're executing a warrant at your house and you're at your house, it's a pretty high standard. Now, I do want to just briefly touch, only because it's a pet issue of mine, I realize this court has ruled on the Fair Sentencing Act and the constitutionality of the crack cocaine penalties. But I just want to say one thing, if the Fair Sentencing Act applied to Mr. Webster.
Well, now, wait a minute. You didn't raise that in your opening argument. And your client's plea agreement waives any sentencing issues, right?
It does.
And we addressed your appeal didn't mention it, nor did your docketing statement.
We addressed this in the reply brief, and I would stand on the grounds that we talked about in the reply brief as to why we can raise it now.
But you didn't even mention it in your opening argument. So
I'm
sorry. He gets no chance to respond.
I understand.
That's why we don't allow it.
I understand. I didn't raise it at the beginning of oral argument. But at any rate, if this was to go back to the district court, there's no doubt that the Fair Sentencing Act would apply to him, and we would ask that this court, based on the suppression argument in our brief, remand this case to the district court for further proceedings.
All right.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thanks, Ms. Cox. The case is taken under advisement.